Welcome to another edition of Engineering Influence brought to you by the American Council of Engineering Companies. We are pleased to welcome Chandra Storiston to the podcast today. Chandra is the CEO and Chief Value Creation Officer at Visible Value, a management consulting firm out of Cary, North Carolina. Chandra, thank you very much for coming onto the podcast.
Jeff, thank you for having me.
Today, we're covering an increasingly important issue sweeping not only the engineering industry, but every sector of the economy, and that's the importance of creating a more diverse and inclusive workplace. Before we get into that issue, I want to take a moment to introduce Chandra and tell a little bit of what Visible Value does and how you got involved with ACEC.
Sure. So we help organizations deliver more value for their clients, employees, and shareholders by enabling firms to really capitalize on those pivotal opportunities during growth, transitions, and transformations. We create authentic strategies that really mobilize organizations and ensure execution through engaged internal and external stakeholders. Our clients become innovative leaders, they achieve their vision, and they consistently outperform their competition. And we got involved with ACEC back in 2007 after speaking at the fall conference in Maui.
Not a bad place to start.
Nope.
Last month at ACEC North Carolina's annual convention, you moderated a panel titled Lessons from Inside the Industry, Utilizing Talent to be Disruption Proof. Our CEO, Linda Darr, participated in the event as a panelist. How was that session received by the attendees, and what did you cover?
With the ongoing talent war, in general, any topic related to talent is of great interest. In addition, prior to the panel discussion, I presented on lessons from outside the industry, which included showcasing some really compelling statistics about the business case for hiring and retaining diverse talent and leaders with an expanded view of diversity to include not only different genders and races, but also different ages and generations and experiences, really any differences that make teams more well-rounded and creative through diverse viewpoints and perspectives. So by then, the audience was really intrigued by the great experiences and results the wonderful women leaders on the panel discussed, including how it has made their firms more resilient to disruptive forces, adaptive to changing client needs and requirements, including those of governmental agencies and large companies, and how it's helped them develop more innovative solutions for their clients.
When you bring up the issue of generations, that's really interesting because millennials are going to make up 75% of the workforce by 2025. And they have a very different set of expectations compared to previous generations when it comes to what they want from the workplace and what they want to receive from the work that they do. How is the face of business changing to meet those demands?
So businesses have to evolve in order to recruit and retain the next generations. Like you mentioned, their expectations are really different than previous generations. In Deloitte's 2019 millennial survey of over 13,000 millennials and 3,000 Gen Zers, they looked at how likely they would be to leave their current employer if they didn't prioritize specific issues. Diversity and inclusion was at the top. 63% of them would leave within 2 years, and 75% would leave within 5 years. This was closely followed by having a positive impact on local communities, offering flexible work practices, both in hours and time, providing a motivating and stimulating work environment, and supporting development through both training and mentoring.
It's interesting that they list flexible work hours and time. Mm-hmm. How much was working remotely or working from anywhere up on that list of wants from that generation?
So those were actually bucketed together in the results of the survey. However, just from the clients we work with, I can tell you that working remotely is one of the most requested benefits that a lot of engineering firms still don't offer.
So really, that's a lot of information right there, statistics or something. I mean, you're talking about 75% leaving within 5 years if these kind of things aren't met. What should our members know and do really to prepare for this changing face of the workplace?
So in an industry where employee turnover is about 15%, and then you add that Gallup's 2017 State of the American Workplace report found that 51% of employees were actively looking for a new job or watching for new job openings. In addition, they found that only 33% of employees were engaged at work, while 16% were actively disengaged. This means that 51% of the workforce is basically coasting through the days. So, and these numbers have likely gotten worse since 2017 with the incredibly low unemployment in most areas of the United States and the current war on talent. So since replacing an employee costs about three times their salary, turnover and lack of engagement is significantly detrimental to member firms. This doesn't mean that firms have to change overnight, but imagine the extra utilization their firms would see and what that means to their bottom lines if they could reduce attrition and improve engagement.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, 51% actively pretty much just coasting through the day and not being engaged because for some reason they're just not getting what they need from their employer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not always very, very evident on its face of what they need, right?
Right.
The employer has to poll and survey its their employees and, mm-hmm. and see exactly where that gap is. That's pretty dangerous when you think about it, especially when you're looking at talent like the engineering community where you need specializations and
mm-hmm.
and people who know specific things and can solve specific issues and, mm-hmm. and questions. That's something else. I mean, from the CEO perspective, what can CEOs do better to meet the needs of this new generation of workers? You know, why is it in their interest? And this is where kind of it gets nuts and bolts because mm-hmm. our members, of course, are CEOs. And while they understand, I guess, the softer side of this issue, they're also really focused on the dollars and cents side. So really, from a financial perspective, why mm-hmm. is it in their interest to really act on these issues?
So McKinsey did a survey earlier this year, delivering diversity. They studied 1,000 companies and found that those in the top quartile of gender diversity were 21% more likely to have financial performance above the industry mean. And those in the top quartile of ethnic diversity were 33% more likely to perform above the industry mean. There's also another survey by BCG in 2017 of about 1,700 companies on innovation and diversity. And it found that those with below average diversity scores only had about 26% of their revenue from innovation. And those are products or services that are developed within the previous 3 years. Whereas companies with above average diversity scores had about 45% average innovation revenue.
That's an amazing gap.
Yeah, it's huge.
And it just shows, you know, the idea of having more voices from more perspectives, more backgrounds in the room, you're able to get different ideas and mm-hmm. attack problems differently.
Absolutely.
And come up with different solutions.
Mm-hmm. In my 16 or so years of consulting to this industry, I have firms that have at least two members of their leadership team that are diverse, whether that's female or otherwise. They have almost 6% higher profitability.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's measurable to the bottom line.
Absolutely.
From a CEO's perspective, what can they do structurally in their businesses to kind of promote greater inclusion and participation by this new generation?
So there's lots of things that firms can do. Like I mentioned, flexibility of work hours, remote working, it's one of the top issues that we see, both for women and for those younger generations. Many firms still believe that people need to be in the office from 7 to 4, and that's not how the new generations work. And lack of flexibility is one of the primary reasons many women leave firms and the industry overall. A 2016 Society of Women Engineers study found that only 20% of engineering school graduates are female, and only 12% of the current engineering workforce are women. And 30% of the women who've left the engineering profession cited organizational climate as the reason for doing so. So there's many options to consider when it comes to remote working, flexible hours, job sharing, and part-time schedules. It doesn't have to be all or nothing. Mm-hmm. Member firms should really consider doing a pilot program first, starting there, and really discovering what works for their firm, their clients, and their employees.
So what really created this switch in mindset? Because you can blame it, okay, social media, the rise of the internet. We have generations that were born when the internet was in its full swing.
Mm-hmm.
You have the effects of the Great Recession. Is there any one reason, or is it a mix of reasons why there's been such a switch generationally with workers?
I think there's lots of reasons, but in regards to career development, there's been that critical shift in thinking of the generations because so many of those younger generations saw their parents get laid off during the recession. So their assumption is that if a firm doesn't tell them how they can grow in their career and what those opportunities are, that they're not valued by the firm, and they'll likely look elsewhere for those opportunities. Firms can no longer expect people to speak up or step up. Career paths and growth opportunities need to be proactively explained, and annual or biannual performance reviews, they're just not enough anymore. These younger generations want constant feedback, and we recommend informal monthly check-ins at a minimum. With our engineering firm clients, we found that consistently holding these informal check-ins reduces turnover up to 4%.
Up to 4%.
Yeah.
And how's that widely adopted within the industry? Do you see that kind of taking a lot more interest by CEOs?
Mm-hmm. Definitely so. Those informal check-ins are becoming much, much more frequent as people look for ways to continue to retain the employees they have because it's so hard to replace them and it's so expensive to do so.
Well, Chandra, the statistics really speak for themselves. I mean, just the increase in diversity improves innovation, profitability, really across the board. For our members, can you give us a case study that kind of puts this into perspective for them?
Sure. We have a client in the Midwest. They're a mid-sized civil engineering firm. Their revenue, we started working with them a couple of years ago, and their revenue had been steadily increasing since 2015, but their profit had been on the decline. They were also really struggling to develop new project managers. They couldn't get their new project managers to really to focus on profitability and really see the bigger picture. They were far more focused on the technical sides of things. They tried hiring additional project managers, and they were really unsuccessful. The talent war has really had a significant impact on their recruiting abilities. They also lacked diversity. And we started working together with them about a year and a half ago or so. And, it's been longer than that now. See?
Time goes quickly.
We started working with them about two years ago, and they we started off by doing an employee engagement survey to really understand kind of the base of where they were at as a company with not only diversity, but employee engagement, with inclusion, and with their culture overall. After receiving the results of the survey, we interviewed a wide variety of people across the firm. And then based on this information, we started to put together a plan to improve diversity and inclusion. This included not only diversity in the traditional sense, but also in diversity of age and backgrounds and experiences. They found that their client base was shifting, and they really wanted to bring on board people who could relate better to their clients as well. So this plan included recruiting from schools beyond those in the Midwest that the senior leadership team had attended. Places where graduates are much more diverse. We also created a buddy system for all new hires so that they could help really learn the culture and also develop that internal network from pretty much the beginning. And we also put together a mentorship program that includes diverse mentors from outside the firm that have prominent roles in the communities because they lacked the diversity at the senior leadership level in their firm. After 10 months, we saw some pretty impressive results. They hired 5 PMs. One came from the staffing industry, 2 from tech, 1 from healthcare, and 1 from consulting. Mm-hmm. So all of these hires initially were outside of the traditional engineering background.
Yeah, so this is a big switch for them.
Huge switch. They really started to realize that a good PM is a good PM,
yeah.
And you don't need to have that engineering degree, which is a big shift for a lot of firms to kind of have that open-minded thinking. 2 of the hires were female and 2 of them were diverse, which was a significant improvement for them in their recruiting efforts. Over those 10 months, we saw that projects were becoming about 6% more profitable on average, for those specific project managers. We developed, trained, and implemented and standardized PM processes firm-wide, and that was really driven by those new project managers who questioned everything, didn't know anything about the industry, and really wanted to really improve things because they didn't know any different.
I can imagine as they asked questions, even the existing leadership was like, well, wait a minute, we never actually took time to think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should readdress these things that we kind of put on the back burner or we didn't think were that important.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they had no attrition, even though as we were setting up this process and talking to everyone about recruiting from outside the industry, and there were lots of complaints, lots of worries, but everybody hung in there. The firm was very intentional with its messaging and communication and really kept everyone up to speed of this is why we're doing it, and these are the benefits that we expect to get out of it, and as we progress, these are the benefits we are getting out of it.
Yeah. So what was the result, I mean, over time?
So over time... they've had significant improvement in their firm. They found that with these diverse hires, whether they have different backgrounds, experiences, et cetera, they found on-time project delivery has gone up by 16%. Under budget project delivery has gone up by 12%. And they found client loyalty has increased 29%, really? Which is super impressive. They've also have three new innovative service offerings that were developed, again, by people who'd come from outside the industry.
And that innovation effect.
Yeah, they said, hey, why aren't we doing this for our clients? Our clients are complaining they don't have this. Mm-hmm. And it bore three new service offerings. Profitability has gone up about 5%, and they're also well on their way to achieving their diversity and inclusion goals.
That's positive signs across the board right there. I mean, that's something. And it shows that, you know, going outside of your comfort zone, trying something new, mm-hmm. asking questions, and maybe getting into some uncomfortable territory can lead to better results overall for the bottom line.
Absolutely.
So what are some best practices in hiring? So our members, of course, are engaged in all facets of engineering, mm-hmm. and they have different demands, but is there a core set of best practices that they should be following to encourage a more diverse and inclusive workplace?
Absolutely. First, the commitment to diversity and inclusion really has to start at the top with the CEO. It's also really important to get all leaders and employees to buy in to really understand why diversity is important and the business case for it, like we talked about. Once you've developed this buy-in, it's crucial to evaluate your hiring processes, including the requirements for those positions. I've worked with many firms now that are really fighting the talent war, and like the example I gave, they were able to overcome some of the challenges by hiring outside the industry. It's also really important to remove any biases that you have in your hiring process. Once you've done this, firms really need to establish a brand in diversity and start showcasing it, whether it's online, social media, at hiring events, in marketing and recruiting materials. These efforts, they really have to be genuine. That commitment to diversity and inclusion must be real and not just words on a website. And then incorporating recruiting efforts from different universities and colleges into your campus recruiting strategies is a great way to find diverse graduate engineers, historically Black colleges and universities, the Hispanic serving institutions, as well as community colleges for other technical roles to find those people with different backgrounds. And another way is to really engage in community activities that support the efforts that you're trying to achieve.
So kind of branch out, look bigger, mm-hmm. and expand from, you know, where you may hire, that pool of talent is always going to be there, but you may not be seeing this other pool of talent, which mm-hmm. is not as readily evident, but just takes a little effort to get out to.
Absolutely.
So those are, you know, the hiring practices. Once you get people onboarded and once they start working, what are some best ways that, you know, CEOs and HR managers can retain that talent and grow it into the next generation of future leaders?
Mm-hmm. Those informal monthly check-ins that I mentioned and employee engagement surveys, those go a long way to really keeping a pulse on your workforce and improving retention. As long as when you ask for feedback, that you actually do something with it. When you get it, communication is critical. Tell people what you heard and how you're going to modify things based on their feedback. This is key in retaining and growing future leaders as well. They need to know what opportunities are available and what they need to do to get there. Like I mentioned, gone is that assumption that if I work hard, the firm's going to take care of me.
Yeah.
So developing those career path options that put people in a place where they can utilize their strengths is really key. Many engineers and firms think the only way they can advance is to become a project manager. And many of those people shouldn't be project managers. So having a path where those engineers can excel technically and mm-hmm. move into technical leadership roles is really important. And for those future leaders that are going to move into the business side, start exposing them to leadership opportunities as soon as possible. Really give them special projects, get them involved in community leadership positions, let them start to spread their wings. Putting together leadership development programs are also a really great way to help those future leaders get prepared. And so when they're needed in leadership roles and they're your firm's really better prepared for succession planning efforts and ownership transition planning efforts. We found that firms with these programs have higher retention as well as significantly higher cumulative profitability because much of the disruption associated with typical changes in leadership transitions is minimized.
Yeah, those are all really good points because you can't sit on, you know, rest on your laurels, right? Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where you always have to be actively looking mm-hmm. and actively checking in with your teams. Mm-hmm. And like you said, a lot of it comes from being genuine, and you have to have an interest in this, because at the end of the day, it's going to improve the bottom line, and it's going to improve your ability to get more work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the questions that was brought up in previous conversations that we've had has been on the client side, mm-hmm. right? So if you have a firm that has a more diverse workforce, and the team coming in bidding or presenting for a project is diverse, both in, let's say, in all really the areas, ethnicity, gender, what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Has there been a noticeable increase in those firms being more competitive and more successful in securing work than firms that haven't put the investment into that?
Absolutely. In the panel at the ACEC North Carolina's conference this past summer, many of the panelists spoke of specific opportunities they've won because they've made the efforts to have more diverse and inclusive environments, because their clients, a lot of governmental agencies, they've been really leading the charge over the past few years, but now we're definitely seeing more and more private companies start to have those diversity requirements as well as they look to hire professional consultants.
Absolutely. That's really great information. There's a lot to unpack here. And I don't think there's anyone. It seems like the kind of thing where you know where the destination is, but how you get there has to be really tailored to your individual firm, mm-hmm. what you're doing. And
absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, for CEOs and for executives who are trying to get their firms to be a little bit more forward leaning on these issues,
mm-hmm.
You know, how can they get your guidance? Where can they find you to get some help?
You can visit our website. It's visiblevalue.net, or you can give us a call at 919-533-2444, or shoot me an email. It's C.Storriston. It's Storriston at visiblevalue.net.
Fantastic. Well, Chandra, as you know, this is something that ACEC has taken a very keen interest in. Mm-hmm. We have the Women in the Workforce group within ACEC that we're trying to develop mm-hmm. and get out there. They've had their meetings at last, the conference that we had in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
Looking forward to it again in October.
Me as well.
And, you know, really focusing in on this, because this is the changing face of engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And to stay competitive, we have to move with the times. That means mm-hmm. that we have to embrace greater inclusion and diversity in the workforce. So mm-hmm. having you on has been great, because it's a great primer on this, and something that we're going to be talking about a lot more. So we look to have you on the show again.
Thank you.
And
I'd
to cover
to.
This. But it's been great to have you. And thank you very much.
Thank you.